Hey, everybody. Happy Thursday night. Today is April 4th, 2024. What a great start to the show. I'm Mike Barrera. That is Jose Nunez. We are across the pitch. We are short Dave Miller tonight, but we are still ready to have. And look, and Jose's dog has joined us as well. Jose, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, man. It feels nice to finally say that the Union won at home, right? It feels nice to finally crack that sentence open. But it also reminds you that it's going to be a very, very, very long season. So, gosh, a lot of trips to Subaru Park up and coming.
I agree. It was nice to see you on Saturday, by the way, as always. It was Kids Day as well, so I got to bring my little munchkin with me on Saturday. She had a blast, so of course we'll be going back soon. But, you know, I know you were just on Bob's show on the Designated Pundits, so it was a pretty good episode. I'm glad I got to check you out. Also, our friend Jillian says hello. Hello, Jillian. If Kyle is there as well, tell him we said hello from the one team we agree on. But listen, the Union pulled off a very impressive win. I know it's at home. At Subaru Park, I get it. But Minnesota was a pretty good squad going into this match. So I'm glad they actually got the performance they did. But am I over-exaggerating, Jose, when I say that it was the best performance from start to finish that we've seen so far this year?
Yeah, it felt like the most complete performance. And mainly, I think, due to the fact that the Jim Curtin's and the players' attention was no longer... And you could have said this about Austin, etc., but it felt like it was the first time that the attention wasn't drawn into different directions, right? With the CONCACAF Champions Cup, whatever else, international duty, et cetera. It finally felt like it was from beginning to end, probably the best performance so far this year, and got to see players continue to perform like Quinn Sullivan. And you also got to see players like, I don't know, Jack Elliott finally find his form that he's had for many, many years and suddenly went away. And same with Jakob Glesnes, who had a big doozy of a first couple of games, finally have another really, really good performance. So all around, I felt pretty good about it.
Valerie, who we also got to see on Saturday, says best day game this season for sure. I love the 2 p.m. start for one. I got home at like 5:36. I grabbed the slice of pizza and just had the rest of my night to myself, which was awesome. When I think back to the Austin game, I feel like they were still very much in that CCC funk because obviously they just got their ass handed to them against Pachuca. So it didn't – yes, we weren't able to focus on that tournament anymore, but it was still in the back of our minds, right? We were still kind of dwelling on that historic loss. So it really felt like almost a fresh start in a way. You came back home. You got through international duty. You earned 4 points on the road, which was very impressive in Austin and Portland. And if you look at the season so far, you probably should have won the Chicago game. You probably should have drew the Portland game. So really the points kind of exchange themselves out. So far, I feel like we're hitting everything as we expected in the best possible scenario. So a 2-0 win the way we did with a shutout was kind of just the cherry on top. The only downside was really the Blake injury. And I know that we're going to discuss that in a bit as well. But Jim Curtin had a press conference, so I guess we'll kind of segue into that, and then we'll discuss more of the Minnesota match. Before we get too far ahead into that, though, what did Jim Curtin say today? I know you were on the presser this afternoon.
Yeah, so Jim gave us an update in terms of Andre Blake, and it seems like he's progressing well. One last test for the concussion protocol, and I think that'll be done tomorrow at some point, and that'll tell us what's happening with him, right? And that he makes a huge difference, though. I think you would agree, and many others who are watching, listening, etc., would agree that this year feels different in terms of knowing when Blake's out, that there's a little bit more comfort than thinking, oh man, Joe Bendick's coming in. And I've never met the man. I think I got to talk to him once as like a press member, but like Oliver Semla and Joe Bendick, completely different levels so far in terms of comfort. So that was one aspect of the press conference, and gosh, the injury to Trent Holden just completely wrecking, I think, a lot of the moving pieces of the Union and forcing the Union actually into really interesting situations. And I asked about that. So if you just bear with me a moment, if Andre is down and out tomorrow, that means that Andrew Rick will get his third loan from Union 2, meaning that between the end of the Nashville game to the end of the MLS season, they can only call him up one more time before they have to make him a full team player. So
that's this injury pretty significant.
It's very significant. And I asked about that, you know, I said, Jim, this injury, international duty coming all across the summer. Obviously I need to search and ask some people about Leagues Cup. Does that apply to Leagues Cup? The loaning of players or not? Cause that's not really an MLS competition.
Good question.
But nonetheless, Andre Blake's going to be out for FIFA windows, qualifiers, et cetera. And if Holden Trent's not ready to go, Andrew Rick. So I asked Jim, like, are you guys thinking about another? Thank you, Jillian. Holden Trent, thank you. if he's not good to go, are they looking for another keeper? Are they going to make Andrew Rick a homegrown? Are they going to just, I don't know. There's that injury has made such a mess of that roster right now.
It's unbelievable because it's what, our fourth string keeper, third string. Like it's so far down the roster, but yet it's now impacting us in April, which is just amazing to say. Speaking of, I mean, listen, I guess we'll just kind of segue into this as well before we get back to the presser. The Union 2 have been off to a good start. Sullivan obviously had an assist in his first appearance. What was it, last weekend or whatever? As you can see, I'm rocking the Bridge Brigade gear. For if you guys haven't gotten it yet, it's great. But I have to make it down to a Union 2 game. You have not made it down to one of those Sunday matches yet, have you, Jose?
I have not. In fact, I'm actually sort of thinking about it, but then realizing that they rescheduled that Sounders game to the Tuesday after the 27th. Mm-hmm. It makes it a little difficult to think, oh man, I'll go to the stadium then and then back again. And they just pile up, man. So I do need to go out and support those guys. Marlon LeBlanc is awesome. Awesome interview with him last year. Such a nice guy. And I actually don't know anything, but and I'm not, yeah, you know, this is just a complete opinion. I don't think he's long for Union 2. He's going to go somewhere and do bigger and better things. But yeah, absolutely got to go out and watch those guys.
Yes, I know Jillian has been there as well as Kyle. I think Jimmy King has been there as well. A lot of our, you know, our friends in the Union circle have made it down. So we really have to just make it an effort at this point to venture down on a Sunday. And it seems like a good time. So obviously a lot of prospects on that team as well. But regardless, let's talk about the game that
or
just
a Thursday at, or a random Thursday at 4 p.m., which is, I think, when their next game is.
That I saw that the last week was a Thursday. I was like, this is a weird time for a game. But, you know, like, again, that's not, I don't make the schedule. So anyway, go back to the Union to win against Minnesota. So it's a 2-1, 2-0 win. What were your takeaways from the first half? What were your takeaways from the second half? Impressive players, et cetera. For me, right off the bat, as I kind of tease that question for you, Quinn Sullivan for me stood out amongst everybody. But go ahead. What were your thoughts on the first half?
I was very impressed with the way that the Union held out the momentum. I think if you were to watch that first half once again, you would see that Minnesota really went forward and the Union were really, really bending, but they didn't break, which is usually what Jim likes to do, right? Continue to sustain pressure. Possession without penetration is the sentence of the week, giggity, giggity, but he does it. So they held out Minnesota from scoring. Timo Pukki had a wonderful chance. Andre Blake did Blake things and saved it.
With a concussion. But again,
yeah, with potentially a concussion. Again, my player, the entire match, you can ask Todd Lewis and Jillian, first time in the press box this past weekend. So, so proud of her. Congratulations. I hope to see you there more often. Frankly, we like you more than Kyle, but he doesn't know that. Or he does now. Don't tell Kyle. Kyle, turn off. But I said it to both of them. Jack looks great today. And ultimately, I wasn't the man of the match, according to the fans, but lo and behold, when MLS releases the team of the week, he's in there, which congratulations to him.
I mean, within the first 4 minutes, I think he had like a really big tackle and he just looked like his old self. And it's funny we say his old self. I mean, we're going back almost probably like a year and a half because last year he had his down points a few times. I mean, we definitely said like, oh, Jacob's, you know, being Jacob, but Jack seems kind of off. But I thought Elliott played great, but it just – Quinn Sullivan on the right-hand side of that formation has been so electric. If you look back at the first goal, he went through two players just to kind of get to that corner to get to begin with. That's a part that doesn't get thought about. Like, okay, yeah, Jack had like the weird assist to get off Kai's corner kick that just snuck through the entire defense. But Quinn leads up to that point by going down like 15 yards down the side by himself to get to that point. But then again, it's nice to see Daniel score in open play. I know it's a bit of a fluky goal. I get it. I don't care how it happens. The fact that he found the back of the net the way he did is important for us. But to your point, you know, they just held on long enough. I was hoping that they would have gotten a second goal earlier in that game compared to like some fluke thing towards the second half. But again, I'll take it for what it is. Minnesota's still a good team. As you go to the second half, though, I know we left, gave up that kind of onside goal right before our second goal. Anything in the second half worry you at all from the team, the way they came out of the locker room? Because we've seen it before where they've come out of the locker room and been pretty stagnant and give up a goal. What were your thoughts on the second half?
The second half was interesting. I think, again, they sustained a bit of pressure, nowhere near as much as what they dealt with the first half, or at least those first 15, 20 minutes. So I was super happy about that. But you then still see some maybe too much bending when in reality, you know, that this Union team truly, I think, is equipped to put the pedal to the metal in a lot of ways with some speed, with some I don't know, some movement. And sometimes it just looks so flat. There's no movement. You don't have Julian Carranza checking back and trying to get, you know, Mikel Ua to make an out and out route really while, you know, there's space that the Carranza draws out. So obviously there's always ways that they can improve upon anything. But just, I can't tell you just how good it is to see this team pull a clean sheet for the first time this season, which is incredible. I mean, in MLS play, I think the last clean sheet might have been Pachuca 0-0 during the home game against in the CONCACAF. So like it's been a minute. So it's nice to finally see that happen for Andre and the team. And well, Oliver and Andre.
Speaking of CONCACAF, rocking the Monterrey hat today. If you can't, just have to make sure we're team Monterrey all the way. That would be the most Union way for them to get into the Club World Cup also. Although some weird technicality because of League's Cup from last year. But anyway, I digress. You mentioned the shutout. I know Jillian, I believe, asked Jacob Glessness in the locker room about how they feel in front of Oliver. And it just seems like the confidence, not even just from the fans, but I think from the players themselves is obvious. They seem comfortable in front of Semele. Whereas in last year with Bendik, I mean, I even heard someone from the stands say, oh my God, thank God it's not Joe coming in for this, because I feel like everybody would just get more tense. They seem to play so loose in front. They seem like they've been playing with him for so long. And then I guess credit to Tanner, because it's two players this year who have been brought in and immediately made impacts almost instantly with Marcus Anderson and Semele. And that's not typically the norm. You'll always just get these players who kind of are there, but they don't really make an impact. These two have come in and actually played some serious minutes and they have done well.
I think you're right. You know, in terms of Oliver, you got to remember he is literally the result of being pushed out of Louisville because Austin sent a very young goalkeeper there to get experience. So Oliver was a man out looking for an outlet really to play and the Union brought him in. No one saw it coming. I had, not that I'm freaking law or anything by any mean or anything like that, but like I had heard zero murmurs about Oliver coming to Philadelphia. So like when I think it was Manuel Veth of Transfer Markets wrote about the story and posted, I'm like, who the hell is this guy? Who's Oliver Semele? So
nobody knew who he was.
Yeah. Kudos to Tanner's. It's one of those, you know, spreading his chips, betting very small, but when it hits, it like rings true and it rings really, really well. But we'll see, man. I don't know. He's shown a lot. And I think, and going back to the Andrew Rick thing, I think you have to sort of think what happens to Holden after this season, right? He is on a club option and you have Andrew Rick who is getting these opportunities to practice and travel with the team because of these U2 call-ups. Do the Union cut ties with him and bring Rick in as a homegrown, a much cheaper contract against the budget? Or do they keep Trent again and let Andrew continue to develop? Though I would probably go ahead, you know, Andrew as young as he is, was part of the CONCACAF Champions Cup roster at his age. So like, because that was before Oliver came in, and then they added Oliver as well. So like, for what it's worth, man, there's just so much to think about in that position, which isn't something that we've really thought about with the Union, the goalkeeper position.
It's going to come down to money. I mean, knowing the Union, they're going to try to find as much ways as they can to save as much money as they can, as they've done recently. Don't mind me. I'm slow, like peeking over at the NIT championship right now because it's Seton Hall versus Indiana State. They're Indiana State's about to win the NIT. But anyway, I digress.
You're a true sicko.
I am. I can't help it. I really can't help myself. So 2-0 win. They held on. They covered the bet that we had placed with the money line and the 1.5, which was great. And I think you had Gosdag scoring and Carranza. Am I correct on that?
You are correct. Mike, I don't miss.
You're amazing. So
I don't miss.
No, your bets have actually been phenomenal this year.
I bet on myself.
No, I think you've had 2 score predictions so far. You've had about 3 goal scorers, and then you had, I think, 1 win or something like that. But either way, you've been doing very well.
So a little louder for the people in the back.
Yeah, he's been doing very well. So let's talk about this next match and our next prediction. So we have Nashville now. We're going on the road to Nashville, and then we're going on the road to Atlanta. So we really don't get a long stretch of time in Super Park, which upsets me very much. So we have two road games ahead of us. What are your concerns with Nashville? I know you just spoke with it on the Designated Pundits. Tell us again what you think about this upcoming match.
I feel like Nashville, as weird as it is for the Union to travel away, well, obviously traveling is away, but going away to Geodis Park and expecting a win is a little rare. But honestly, after seeing how they performed in Portland against Portland, a much better team, despite all the international call-ups for both teams, there's my son. He's here. I know you heard him. I would think that the Union, especially with no Walker for Nashville and no Shaq Moore and no Leal in the midfield, that's a recipe for, again, if we're going to make picks, I would say Carranza with a brace, at least 2 goals to continue to cement his blank check that he should be getting from the Union to have that many goals as early in the season. So hard to see him lose.
No, I hate to agree with you because I feel like my gut's telling me Nashville's going to pull it off at home.
Right.
But you mean, listen, so let's look at the last few matchups between these two clubs. It was a 0-0 draw at Philadelphia on October 7th. It was a 2-0 miraculous win in Nashville. If you remember, that's a Joe Bendick game where he must have said about 10 prayers because the ball just didn't want to go into the net. So it's a 2-0 win in Nashville on July 12th. And then you go back, the previous one was a 1-1 draw, a 1-1 draw before that, and a 0-1 loss at Philly. So it has been a lot of draws between these two clubs. It's always been a closely contested match as well. I think I'm just almost traumatized by what happened in Portland. I saw us go in there with such little roster and we pulled off this miraculous win. So I'm not discrediting Nashville for missing a couple players because they could very easily do that to us too. So I'm trying to be cautiously optimistic on that. But I do think there has to be some credit to the fact that Union are scoring goals right now. They score 2 against Nashville, or I'm sorry, 2 against Austin. They score 3 against Portland, and they put in 2 against Minnesota, which was a solid squad. And yeah, sure, maybe the goals were a little fluky, but you still had to put them in the back of the net. You still have to have Bedoya with the awareness to get or Carranza the ball in the box. You still have put 7 goals in the last 3 games. I'm just saying.
Dude, Mike, you're absolutely right. And frankly, I would caution you from using that word fluky, and you sort of like corrected yourself too, but like, what's Daniel Gastek supposed to do? Not score? Like, he had the opportunity. He was in the right place at the right spot, right? And they coach that, you know, that's you go to this spot when you're in a corner, you follow the play, you trail the play, etc. Carranza gets that ball from Bedoya off that header. And sure, that center back had just entered the game maybe like 2 or 3 minutes earlier and causes that terrible mistake. But make no mistake, man, that Julian Carranza finish is class. That's not fluky at all. So yeah, it's a game that you can expect goals. And I think maybe in bunches for Philadelphia, especially with the way that some of these folks are playing. And if anybody needs a goal, is Mikael Uwe. Like, yes, he had the assist and some okay moments, but for anyone to score maybe a goal or two in one match would be him to really help satiate. God, what if this becomes never going to happen, but say Ty Baribo gets in as a sub, plays 30 minutes and scores a goal.
You're segueing to my next questions here, but listen, Michael did score the first ever goal in that stadium.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that. Maybe want to put a little, you know, anytime goal score on Michael to kind of just, you know, rekindle the pass there with a goal. I think what we saw from Julian against Minnesota is kind of what we've been wanting to see from Michael, that clinical finishing. We've seen Uwe now one-on-one against a keeper, what, maybe three times this year, if not four times already. And he's either hit the keeper in the head or just missed it entirely. I think that's where Julian obviously stands out. I mean, as much as Michael sometimes gets himself into the best position, he doesn't necessarily finish the way we want to. As of right now, though, Nashville are very slight favorites. They're at plus 160. The Union are plus 180 underdogs. So pretty much an even match in terms of the books. The over 2.5 is minus 102. So pretty good number. If you think it's going to be a high scoring affair, over 2.5 on FanDuel isn't too bad. We'll get to the lineup and the formation in a minute. Any predictions before we get to that, the next part of this conversation?
Just goal wise is what you're suggesting?
Anything. We're asking?
Yeah, Yeah, I think Carranza scores two and Mikael Uwe scores one. I think it's a 3-0 Union win. And this is as
wow,
bold as I'm going to get.
Really optimistic.
I didn't even think about this, though. Even with Blake, I could see, what's his name? Scheffelsberg, the Canadian guy. Yeah, doing some damage there with his speed, though he would be going up against Nate Harriel. So maybe 3-1. Final score, Carranza brace, Uwe goal, anytime goal.
Wow, you're.
What if this hits, Mike?
You know, I can put the whole thing together if you want me to see if that exact thing hits. Well, I'll do that just for the sake of it. I'm not as optimistic as you are. I actually think this can be a draw. I do.
Okay.
And Valerie says Jose's always right. 1-3 Union. So that's. I mean, Valerie's your biggest fan. I get it. How can you not be? I don't know. I don't want to be too optimistic too early. I think 3-1's a little ridiculous. I could see this being 1-1 draw. And I think it's going to be a good draw. You get there because it's still a tough place to play. And Frank says, don't discount Quinn in this one too. I agree. I think Quinn has been kind of itching for a goal. Since the Portland match, he almost had, what, two against Minnesota? He had that one off the crossbar, which I know you kind of highlighted on Twitter, which is like one of the best volleys. It was beautiful.
Here are a couple of points for you to think about, Mike, before you make this decision, right?
Go ahead.
Nashville, one win in their last five. You know who they beat the last time that they won? No. Mocha FC in the Champions Cup. Okay?
So they're due is what you're saying.
What I'm saying is that they're probably going to continue to stutter, especially with no Walker Zimmerman. Also, they have not kept a clean sheet in the last seven games. Last time they did that was maybe I got that messed up. Last time they had a clean sheet was Mocha FC. So I might have had that wrong in terms of their last win. So obviously I did. So regardless, one win in their last five and a clean sheet was the last one. Last time was, February 28th. It's been a minute since they've had decent defense. And I wouldn't say that Mocha FC is really a clean sheet to be proud of, if that makes any sense.
No, it definitely does make sense. I'm totaling up your stuff, by the way, to get some sort of number here. If you do, okay, are you ready for this, Jose? Are you ready? If you do, I'm sorry, I had to put Nashville money line. I have to back up. Give me 1 second here. I will do the Philadelphia Union money line and the brace for Carranza and the Uwe anytime goal. You're looking at a plus 3,600 bet.
$20 on it, baby.
I put $5 on it. Carranza brace, Michael Uwe anytime, Philadelphia money line, $5 pays out $184. So if this hits, I'll take you out for a nice dinner. How's that? Is that fair?
Sounds fantastic. You can just Venmo me. Speaking of which, I owe you money. Now that I think about it, I owe you like $12 or whatever it is.
Well, just you pay the tip on this dinner I take you out to, and then we'll call fantastic. It. There you go.
I'm a cheap date.
There you go. I think it's gonna be 1-1. I think that's fair. Actually, I agree with Frank. I think Quinn Nets won. If you remember last year in Nashville when we had the 2-0 victory, that was the game that Quinn Sullivan came on and like just was really aggressive at net. Mm-hmm. He almost. I think Frank's onto something. I'm gonna go with Quinn Sullivan goal, but I am gonna go with a 1-1 draw. I will be happy to be wrong if it's a Union win. I just don't think it's gonna happen. But again. Let's look at the formation and the lineup and figure this out. I personally think it's going to be the same exact thing we saw against Minnesota. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I don't think you're wrong there at all. I think it's something to expect now as Jim is not forcing himself to have to make these swaps and these changes because of CONCACAF Champions Cup. I think the Union are going to start to settle into a formation that he can feel comfortable with, maybe not formation, but rather the bodies. You know, he could play whatever he wants in terms of the formation. Body wise, I think you're gonna see the same characters from.
What's that? I think I lost you, buddy.
Oh, okay. Am I there?
You are now. You're good. You're good. It stuttered.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, I think that the next time that you'll really see any changes are either an international break or Leagues Cup. So get used to what you saw against Minnesota.
So Frank brings up a great point that I kind of wanted to talk about today, touching upon your Bariba point. I think Bueno needs additional minutes. Sure. I think the Union, the getting kicked out of CONCACAF Champions Cup early affects that heavy rotation. International duty being gone affects that. Quinn Sullivan being arguably the best player on the field right now each week affects that. Seton Hall just won the NIT by 2 points. Indiana State choked it away. I also think McGlynn playing well on the left affects that. And also the way Jim is using the substitution right now with Bedoya affects that as well. I think there's a lot of things going against Bueno. And unfortunately for Jose, or for Jesus rather, Leon Flock isn't terribly far away. That's, again, another name being thrown into the mix in the midfield. Do you think Jim is underutilizing Bueno, and how do you think he should use him moving forward?
Yeah, it's tough. I think it was, I forget who it was that asked the question today during the presser, but you know, you think about Bueno and Mbaizo, players who deserve, or I don't want to say deserve, but have shown that they are first team players or caliber players in most MLS teams. Not getting these opportunities, though it's hard to argue. It's hard to see, don't not see why, I should say, because you have Nate Harriel playing out of his mind, walked himself into and solidified himself into an Olympic squad that's only going to take 18, but really it's 16, but really it's 13 because they're going to use three players who are over the age of the limit. So he and McGlynn have solidified their spots. So you have Harrell and McGlynn playing amazing ball. You have Gazdag, who's Gazdag, and you have Martinez, who's Martinez, right? And Sullivan is untouchable right now. So Jim spoke about that in terms of the man management, right? How do you talk to these guys? What do you tell them? And the reality is, you know, when the time comes, injuries will happen. Suspensions will happen. I think Jose Martinez is already at 3 yellow cards for the season, 2 more, and then he has to sit out a game, if I'm correct. So opportunity will come, but you're right. Leaving CONCACAF earlier than I expected, probably expected, and then not being in the U.S. Open Cup really only leaves Leagues Cup for them to get a firm shout or a firm opportunity outside of those injuries. So it's, I don't know, it's tough. I too agree that Bueno should be getting more minutes, but again, it's so hard to argue with asking Jim to switch what's working, right? Because I think back to that formation point, I think the 4-4-2 is going to become more and more common for this team. Take out somebody, put Bedoya in, and then you sort of give yourself a doubles, you know, 2 sixes with Jose in the middle, right? So, like, where do you put Jesus? Where do you put Mbaizo? Because Nate Harrell's not going to come out. He provides so much defensively and offensively. So it's a good problem to have as a reporter of the team as well as a fan of the team.
Well, I mean, again, this kind of goes back to the conversation we had before the season started. The union did not address any sort of additions to their club. They just hoped that everybody got better. Quinn Sullivan has basically made Ernst Tanner look like a genius because he has become the addition we were hoping for, right? We were hoping that someone was going to be brought in to make that midfield much more dangerous. Quinn decided to just become amazing all of a sudden out of nowhere. I've been calling it for years, though, by the way. I'm just saying that. I am the biggest Sullivan stan there is. I think the fact that Bedoya has been better than expected as a substitution as well, because he's not just coming in and kind of making some good passes. He's not just coming in and having some good defense moments. He's creating chances. I mean, he had the goal against Sporting Kansas City. He had the assist against Minnesota. I'm forgetting one right now off the top of my head, but he's had a couple of key moments so far for us this season as a substitution. I mean, you see what he did against Saprissa. He came in and the team just got better, but go ahead.
No, I mean, you called Quinn and Mike, check the tape. Even before I was like a sitting person in this podcast with you and Dave, I've been jamming. Bedoya and the city need to figure out how to slowly remove themselves from one another, because there's going to be a time where he's going to have to go. Obviously, the time is it now. But this new role is exactly what I had been calling for a little while, right? Yeah, sure. Jim is always going to be behind the microphone saying that you know, Bedoya can still play 90 minutes. And that's fair. It's probably true. But he can't play 90 minutes for 50 games in one season. So this new role, I think, is so, so fitting for him. Give him a good 35-minute run. Honestly, as someone outside looking in saying it, Jim probably gives him 20 or 15 minutes tops, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on the situation, because of the way that he substitutes. And according to him, nothing really is ever planned for his substitutions. But he's just thriving in that role, and it's been awesome to watch. And I'm so, so happy that he's still around. I like to see him when we're in the mix zone with the players, and his kits are super sweet. So all around, just great to have him back.
Speaking of great things, the U17s have advanced to the GA Cup quarterfinals, by the way. They had a 1-0 victory today, so that was pretty cool to see. I know the GA Cup is pretty important for them, so it's nice to see our youth, our baby snakes, doing well. But, you know, it's funny, too, that you would think two players in the midfield wouldn't affect the forward position as much as it does. But because Quinn is so dangerous right now, and because he's so versatile in both a striker position and a midfield position, and to Valerie's point, Jim Curtin listening to his staff saying, you know what, let's put this 4-4-2 flat into place. Ty Baribo is now just an afterthought at this point. So let's talk about Ty. Because I know Todd Lewis posted today about a small clip saying, oh, Ty played 19 minutes against a Red Bull in this match, and he, you know, was a 4-1 win. And that was about 13% of his minutes so far as a Union player, was that 19-minute run he had against the Red Bulls. To Frank's point with Bueno, okay, you do need to give these guys minutes. And it's not just saying for the sake of you know, testing them out to see how they're doing. Just to be prepared, because you don't know when Michael Uwa goes down. You don't know if Carranza gets sold. You have to have Baribo ready to play soon. And I'm concerned now that the international duty is over, that this is just never going to happen. Because, again, didn't he bring Donovan in again against Minnesota too? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yep, and Donovan almost had an assist, had Jack McGlynn finish that ball. And funny enough,
that's true.
We see it from high up down when we're in the press box, but when we're in, you know, fan level in the stands, we don't often see everything. As soon as Jack missed that shot, or I should say hit the keeper with that shot, but credit to the keeper, whatever, you could see Jim just like, he was aggravated. he was not happy about it. But listen, I think you're right. There is still an avenue for Ty to play international soccer this summer, and it's through the Olympics. Hypothetically, he could be one of the over 23 choices for Israel, and they qualified for the Olympics, where Israel absolutely cut themselves out as Euro 2024 after losing to Iceland, I think. But listen, I said this to I think Jillian and Todd earlier today, but man, ever since landing in Philadelphia, that man's life has been in pause, right? He comes from playing soccer. He comes from scoring goals, getting minutes, etc. to that funny AI picture that I made, but the Ballon d'Or, which is obviously the award that the best player in the world gets every single year, the bench d'Or.
That was funny. I like that.
Made for someone like Ty Burebo. Unfortunately, you know, it's I don't know, man. It's push comes to shove. Is he really that far below that he's behind someone like, and this is not to disparage him, but like Marcus Anderson?
But it's not even the far below part that bothers me. So I looked back on the key events for the summary from the game. Okay. Donovan comes in 4 minutes after the second goal by the Union is scored. So it's the 88th minute. Okay. You knew you were going to have some stoppage time because of Blake going down. So at this point, you don't know the stoppage time yet. You're assuming 10 minutes, right? So you're thinking 10 to 12 minutes where Burebo just has to come in and get some cardio in and finish this game off. And if you can't bring Burebo in for 10 minutes on a 2-0 lead at home, when are you going to bring him in? When is the and then again, I know you're going to hate me for saying this. I'm just going to say it. It goes back to my opinions on college basketball. You play some scrubs in non-conference. You get a big lead, and then you bring your bench guys in to give them minutes because you never know when something happens down the road. That's what my concern is. I don't care how good Marcus Anderson's playing. I don't care how good Donovan's playing. I don't care how good anybody's playing. You have Donovan replacing Goslock, right? So then why not shift Quinn back and just put Burebo up top and let him just be a forward for 10 minutes? Again, maybe does he deserve it? Maybe not. That's a different conversation entirely. Does he deserve for the roster's depth to get minutes? Yes, because ultimately the roster will benefit from him getting some real game time minutes. That's it. That's my only thing about it. Every other player has seen the field except for him.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. It's just we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You know, that's the other part, right? Is he just, again, I don't know anything. I haven't inquired or asked anybody, but like, is he just a shithead at practice and not getting along? Does he just have a shitty attitude? I mean, every time that Jim talks about professionalism, and he mentioned it today with Raffanello, right? A player who, I was about to ask, can we curse? Of course we can. Fucking crushed it in Portland.
He had a good game.
But did not play at all against Minnesota and still goes the following week, this week, and continues to crush practices, trying to buy his time. And obviously, Raffanello has, and I say it in air quotes, graduated from the Union 2 now, right? Like, he's too good for the Union 2. And not too good, but I don't think he gains anything from playing in that anymore.
No.
Is Ty just the complete opposite of that? I don't know. Who knows? We don't know. But it's just... It's just fascinating, and I think if this continues to carry on and ultimately fast forward, I don't remember how long his contract is. He comes and goes, or goes on loan while he's still under contract here for however long it is. Like, he's gonna be up there with sexy season levels of disappointment, as well as. Yeah, sexy season and Gino Portella levels of disappointing for this team in terms of like hype to be completely flat then.
I'm about to answer Frank's question. It says, what was Ty Burebo's former team? Looking at Wikipedia right now because that's where I get all my information. Wolfsburger AC, 2021 to 2023.
Yeah, Austria,
62 appearances, 28 goals.
That's pretty damn good.
He is so, and I'll go back too. If you want to go, Frank, I'll go back to Maccabi Petah Tikva.
Yep.
I don't know if I pronounced that at all correctly or not. 96 appearances, 23 goals. Again, Wolfsburger AC, 62 appearances, 28 goals. Philadelphia Union, 5 appearances, 0 goals. Israeli national team, 11 appearances, 3 goals since 2022. I to Valerie's point, I know she mentioned the comments. I'm not on the screen right now if anything else came through, but I don't understand it. It goes back to Perea. It goes back to Torres. It goes back to sexy season. It goes back to Torres. But even Torres saw more time. what is he doing wrong? That's my question. That is so. Why is he on this on the bench then? If he's doing something so terribly wrong, why even put him in the rotation as a bench piece? We have Marcus Anderson. We have Chris Donovan. It's clear that Jim will take Bedoya and put Quinn up top rather than actually using somebody off the bench. So what's the point?
Especially with Ty Baribo earning a guaranteed compensation of $710,000.
A lot of this right here.
So that's a lot of money for someone that, you know, at some point in the coming month or so, I think, is when the MLSPA will release the salary guide. And it'll be interesting because Ty Baribo was not going to be making less money this year. What I mentioned to you was as of September 15, 2023. So he's going to be making more money. I also want to know how much Jesus Bueno is making with his new contract. But yeah, I mean, the question then becomes, what is Marcus Anderson and what is Chris Donovan, another one who got a new contract? What are they making? And because they're getting a lot more opportunities in game time than Ty Baribo, and Ty's making 700K.
Listen, if the union want to pay me 700K to sit there, I'll do it. I'm just saying. I got a lot of good energy. I can run between players' legs if I need to. I'm just
Mike,
saying.
But you haven't won the bench Dior.
That's true. I know. That was a great tweet put out earlier. Anyway, we can talk about Baribo all night. The point is, to Frank's point as well with Bueno, I love the way we're rotating right now. I do like the fact that Bedoya's coming in. I just want these other guys to get minutes too, because again, it does matter, especially when you're winning 2-0. If you're winning 3-1 in Portland, maybe not, but 2-0 at home against Minnesota, come on, give me a break. If you're down Nashville 3-0, bring people in, please.
Yes, and I just want to be super, super clear. And Mike, I think you and I are in alignment. Actually, I know we are. We usually are about this stuff. But like, we don't want anything but success for these guys.
No, exactly.
Truly, truly. And yes, we might be poking a little fun here and there, bench Dior, whatever. But like, we want this guy to succeed. I mean, this is what this team needs. We haven't even touched, and probably not for today's conversation, but like, Carranza. Again, like, man, July, he has the ability to talk to whoever he wants to start playing for them in January. Like, Baribo was supposed to be the answer. And I just don't know that that's going to pan out.
And that's what we said before the season started. Although we didn't bring in another forward to add to the depth and to bring in that big DP or big name player, Baribo, in essence, was a new player because we had no idea what he was about, right? He was basically not used last year. And now it's April, and July is 2.5 months away. So I digress. The Union have Nashville on Saturday. It's an 8:30 p.m. kickoff. Jose thinks it's going to be a 3-1 route. Carranza with a brace, Ua with a goal. I'm being more negative like Dave has been recently. I'm going to go 1-1 draw. I think Quinn Sullivan nets one. Please, Union, prove me wrong. I would love to see another win. For now, Jose, do you have anything coming up in the future that we should keep an eye out for?
Yeah, actually. And Mike, this, I don't know if I share this with you or it might be a little bit of a surprise. I spoke with Nick Pariano today for a good 30 minutes, our wow. newest homegrown. And I should have that conversation out either tomorrow afternoon or maybe Saturday morning leading into the game for all of you to enjoy. Really good conversation. Our good friend Mark Kelkenberg of Kelken Sport joined me because he was available at that random time during the day. And we spoke about his time at YSC. We spoke about his time at Duke and with in the ACC conference. And sort of what it felt like to be on the bench for the Pachuca game, his very first time on a Philadelphia Union senior team roster. So a good 25-30 minute conversation. Very, very nice young kid. Started Duke at 17 years old.
Wow. Young, very
young, young.
Oh my gosh.
Graduated, went a year early. I can't imagine sitting in a lecture hall with, you know, 150 people at Duke University as a 17-year-old.
You know, I went to law school with a girl who graduated from law school at 22.
Oh, that's bananas.
I was in law school at 22. So she had like finished rowing in like 2.5 years and was like, oh yeah, I'm graduating my law degree at, you know, 23 or whatever years old. I'm like, this is weird. You're a child. But good for him. That's impressive. It's okay. So we'll keep an eye out for that tomorrow. Again, I typically try to put out an article for the Union, you know, on Saturday mornings, just kind of like a little bet slash match notes, recap on the presser. So keep an eye out for that as well. Saturday mornings, I try to get that out. Again, we've been doing pretty well with our picks. If you pick one of us to bet on, you'll do okay. But otherwise, this is Across the Pitch. We have not recorded every single week. I apologize. We've been trying to do it every 10 days at least. Been very busy lately for all three of us. Otherwise, Jose Nunez at Jose R. Nunez 91 on Twitter. He also has a Substack. It's definitely awesome to check out. Please do, as well as you're not. Are you on Reddit too? Anything else? Facebook, right? Facebook. Are you posting?
I just post and run. So I'm so bad about that. I just post and just start working on the same thing. So I don't get to check out those communities too often, but my stuff does filter out that way. So I appreciate everyone's support and the very kind words, Mike. I try my best with that little side project that has been the Substack.
It's been great. Again, Jose R. Nunez on Twitter. That's where his majority of his work is. For me, Mike Barrera is mbarrera1323 on Twitter and TikTok. I try to make a video every now and then. It's not as easy, but Twitter is where you can find me at nowadays. Again, this is Across the Pitch. We'll try to be back for an episode next week. Until then, go Union.
Thank you so much, guys.